It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley are here. We'll talk about Windows on ARM, the revelation that it's really Windows on Qualcomm. We'll also talk about the new view in Microsoft Teams. It's a little disturbing. And why Microsoft just sent an executive to Magic Leap. The conspiracy theories abound. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley, episode 680, recorded Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. Get off my Alcantara lawn. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of you are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you trust to protect you from online threats. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. And by Melissa. Like expired milk, 30% of your customers' data goes bad every year. And that's money down the drain. Visit Melissa's developer portal for free access to data quality APIs, demos, and code samples. Freshen up your sour data today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. With these two softies right here.
Soft in the head, maybe.
Soft in the head. Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Paul Theron, Theron.com, his blog. And every week for the last 680
every
weeks.
Freaking week.
Every freaking week. We get together. Uh-huh. We talk about Microsoft. Hi, guys. Mary Jo got a haircut.
I did. Exciting.
I did actually compliment you on your hair last week. I kind of liked the way it was going.
Oh, my God. Did you really? Oh. It was like curling under, and I was like, oh, I don't like this. I feel like George Washington with some extra curls or something like that.
You're going to wear one of those colonial three-sided hats?
No. I just was like, oh, it's so hot. Very just cut all the back off.
I just appreciate it, Mary Jo, that you didn't pull the usual trick. Do you notice anything different about me?
Oh, no, right. I never do that because then people guess really quickly.
Oh, I never get it. I never get it. Did you shave your mustache? I don't know. What?
Exactly.
What? Great. What did you
do?
What?
Glasses?
You're wearing, no. Yeah. No, I got a haircut. You didn't notice?
I know. And it was very exciting. I went downtown in an Uber and I went to my hair salon and it was great. And
yay. I'm sure they were.
Then I came home and sanitized my entire body. Yeah. My
burned your
clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Well, it looks great. Contrary to what Paul snatched your defeat from the jaws of victory.
You look great.
There you go, Paul. That's
there you go.
Like
see, there you go.
I mean, you look great before.
You look great now.
Great now.
Paul looks
I feel
like
much
he's
cooler.
Got, did you get the guy with the in the little suit to come and cut your hair, Paul? Or?
No, I had my sister cut my hair.
Looks good. Yeah,
a while ago, yeah. I actually am almost due.
Can you believe a year ago? If
this
you told
be
me,
news.
Hey, wow, the big story of the week, Mary Jo got a haircut.
I know. Yep. That wouldn't be the news.
I bartered a cup of flour for a haircut.
We have gone back to those times. Yes. I'm afraid we have. Yep.
I know. The simple things we can do now that like seem like such a huge deal, right? You're like, I got a haircut. I rode in an Uber.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Right.
I know.
I rode an Uber. I saw know. Midtown.
Are you from the future?
So the most interesting thing to me, because I haven't left my 10-block radius since March.
Right.
And so the most interesting thing was everybody downtown is open for business. Like they're putting little tiny restaurants out in the middle of median strips of roads and stuff. And I'm like, wow, everything is open.
Yeah.
Well, it's like going to Europe now. You know, restaurants are just spilling out onto the sidewalk.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah,
I know. But up here in Midtown, that's not the case. There's a few places open up here, but down there, everybody's open. Wow. It's just like a free for all. Right. Yeah.
Well, the virus never hit downtown.
Is that it?
No, I don't know. I don't understand any of it.
People are just saying, you know what? We got to open up because we're going to go out of business if we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. I do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the shocking news.
Mm-hmm.
Shocking.
What is that?
Shocking.
The start menu is being changed.
I think it's at the top. So this is
Mary Jo. It
should be at the top. Yeah, I would have said you buried the lead if you didn't mention that.
Okay. Well, I
know. It's not as big as it sounds, right?
It's not even, it's nothing is what it is. Mary Jo often talks about how she can't notice UI changes.
Yeah.
I would say that I'm kind of on the opposite. I kind of obsess over this stuff. And you know, obviously, I'm writing a book about Windows 10. I want to make sure it's up to date. Install this build to see what the new start menu will look like. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it and I thought, I didn't get the new start menu. This looks exactly the same. And then I looked at the computer next to it, which had the current version, and okay. It's super subtle. It's super subtle.
Yeah.
Well, it's light colored. I noticed that right away.
That's the light.
You can have light now. I mean, you can have that color scheme exists today.
Okay, don't tell me.
See if you notice.
It got a haircut. No.
Right. That's a good example. It looked fine before, and it looks fine now.
Is it more square? I don't know. What's different? You're going to have to tell me.
Two things. Okay. So, go ahead. Go ahead if you want to do it.
Theme aware tiles are in the start menu. When I was writing those words, I'm like, what does that even mean?
As you were saying words, I was asking what that meant. Yeah.
Right. So it just means the background that is usually behind the tiles is now partially transparent, right?
Yes. So to put this in perspective, the way they are in current shipping versions of Windows is that unless it's styled by the app maker, the backgrounds of those tiles is the color of your accent color.
Right.
So it typically is a kind of a rich color. Not
for me, it's blue.
Like we were seeing there.
It's like dark
for
blue.
For me, it is also blue. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. That's one of the two.
But you know what? You know why this doesn't matter that much? How many people use the tiles in the start menu?
I take them out right away. I just go through
maybe many people listen to the show don't, but maybe normal people
I stop
do.
Bothering taking them. It's just not even worth it. It's like, why even
just
take
ignore
them?
Them. Yeah.
So there is one other change, by the way. So on the left column, which is like the all apps list, the icons no longer have a border, like a square border. So if you look in our current version of Windows 10.
Oh, yeah.
Those will look like the smallest tile size. It's an icon, but it has a hard edge.
Yeah.
And it's usually, I would say always a background color, which is also typically the accent color.
Yeah. I never would have noticed that one.
Boy, I'm so glad that we led with this story.
You know what? You know what we didn't talk about, though?
What?
Well, there are other things. And the one I'm the most intrigued about is personalization on the taskbar. Why do I care about this? Because I think they're doing some A/B testing on this to see what should be pinned to the taskbar when you first get a new version of Windows, right?
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
And so that to me is kind of interesting. Like, why are they testing this? And so there's one that they cited a bunch of examples. One was if you have a linked Android phone, it would show your phone pinned to the taskbar. And I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah. Sure.
Cause I think a lot of normal people still don't quite get the your phone thing. And if it was there, they'd click on it and they'd be like, what is this? Right. Oh, it's my phone.
Hey, there's my phone. Yeah. Who would have thought it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you were using Xbox Live accounts connected with your gaming PCs would be pinned to the taskbar. I kind of like that idea. I think that's kind of, it's very subtle kind of a cool idea.
The bigger issue is that this is standardized by Microsoft and PC makers don't have a lot they can do there. So I don't know what the exact number is, but
that's true.
I'm sure a PC maker can put two things down there maybe, you know.
So it's really their own things pinned there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like you said, it's not a giant deal, but anytime you change the UI of Windows, people notice that. Unless you're me, then you don't notice that. But most normal people do notice it.
Yeah. So what I equated this to was that great story I'd heard from someone on the Office team where back in the day, they would arbitrarily change the look and feel of the toolbars and menus in every version of Office so that you could tell which version it was at a glance, right?
Yeah.
And they called that lipstick on a pig because it wasn't done for functional purposes. It was just done literally so you could look and say, oh. And that's kind of one of the issues with Windows 10. You could bring up Windows 10 1809 or 1803 or 7, you know, if you could, if you could find it, 1709 or whatever. And most people would probably never notice the difference between that and what we have today. You know,
I don't think I would, to be honest.
For the most part. You know, there were a couple of little things that kind of came and went. Remember the people thing was down at the taskbar for a little while or whatever. But for the most part, I mean, the, you know, light, they refreshed the light theme and added a dark theme at some point. But, you know,
what's very a big change, though, that we don't talk about a whole lot on the show. The search box looks very different from what it used to look like. Right. Like if you click on search, what that looks like now compared to what that used to look like is very, very different because your documents come up now and the apps come up and you can search within apps, documents, web. Like that is a very, very different experience than when these feature builds started first rolling out. Right. But we don't talk about that as much, search.
It's, I mean, I turn all that stuff off.
You turn off search?
I turn up the search box. I mean, actually, if you just open, start, and start.
Right, you don't need it. Yeah, I know. Experience. I never remember that, so I leave the search box because I don't know why I can't get used to that workflow of just typing. Like, I always want to click on something to search.
I just find on a laptop in particular that... when the screen real estate's at a premium, that search box takes up a lot of space. There's a task view button, which is completely superfluous. And then there's a Cortana button, which I would never use if you paid me. So I just get rid of that stuff. And it's not just so it's not there staring at me. It's I need the space for the icons that I do want to use, you know, pinned.
The other feature that's new in this build that came out last week for the fast ring, I need you to explain this feature to me because I've read about this and I cannot visualize this as the alt tab for Edge thing.
Yeah. Right.
So, like when I wrote that, I'm like, I don't even know what that is saying because I don't use alt tab right now to switch between apps. I don't even use it. No, I never use that.
Oh, well, okay. I don't do it that way.
How do you do it? I just click on my app that's on the taskbar. That's kind of what I do.
Okay. So. Anyone who uses Alt Tab to switch, I don't know how far back this goes, forever. Alt Tab is used to switch between open windows, or you could think of it as applications, I guess, but it's open windows technically. So if you had like three File Explorer windows open and you hit Alt and then held down or hit held down Alt and hit Tab, you would see, well, would you actually? Let me make sure. Yeah, you see all three of those, they're all separate. So it lets you tab through the open windows on your system. The problem is a lot of people today spend most of their time in a browser. They have multiple browser tabs open. So if you want to use a keyboard to navigate, you have to remember two different forms of navigation and then know when to use them. So Alt Tab would get you to the browser window. But once you're there to switch between the tabs, you have to type Control Tab.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess the argument here is, well, why do we have two different ways of getting to the same thing? Maybe those browser tabs, or at least some of them, should be an alt tab. So as someone who likes not to take my hands off the keyboard and actually uses keyboard shortcuts for everything that I can, my first reaction to this was very knee-jerk and negative. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, you know, I wish there was a way to draw a distinction between web apps, which it would be nice to have in that alt tab list, right? Which, you know, if you pin them to your tab, it would be. But inside the browser, they wouldn't be. And then like documents, or if you're reading like a website article or something like that. Like but, you know, and you could run into a problem too. People will have 20 browser tabs open. So like right now on my computer, when I open alt tab, I have five things, five apps, five windows. But I have 10 browser tabs open. So that would explode, you know, the number of thumbnails and alt tab. And so kind of playing with it. So this is this feature and that start menu aren't necessarily coming in a particular version of Windows, right? Because they're in the channel, which used to be the fast ring. Presumably the earliest these features could arrive would be Windows 10 version 21H1, which is about a year from now. Then again, you know, that I just completely let my my brain just erased.
That, no, but you know why I got confused about this? Because they're also doing other things with your browser tabs. Like they're going to have vertical tabs. That's going to be coming to Edge, right?
So I'm
like,
an Edge feature.
I know
this is a Windows feature.
That's true. I still feel like too many ways to do one thing, or too many options. Like that's the thing I always find about Windows. Like, yeah, it's good you're adding all these things, but I feel like there's too many options.
Yeah. So. I mean, a keyboard shortcut is just is literally an alternate way to do something that steers a GUI, right?
Right, right.
The thing I was going to say earlier that I zoned on was that the new start menu is so subtle and non-eventful. I could actually see that debuting in 20H2. I mean, why not? It doesn't, it's nothing. I mean,
yeah, I guess technically it could, right? Like just because it's in the fast ring doesn't mean it can't.
Right. Right. They've never done that, but I mean, why not? It's a small thing.
Yeah.
My especially guess after is Apple just announced their stuff. I know, me too, but I mean, just because, a little refresh like that.
I know. Just because I feel like they're trying to draw somewhat of a distinction about the second half builds being almost no new features, right?
Well, this is almost not a feature, so it's perfect.
It is true. You're right. It's so subtle. No,
but anyway, as far as keyboard shortcuts go, I mean, in Windows Vista, they really confused matters because they added remember they used to call it Windows Flip, which was Alt-Tab.
Oh, yeah.
And then Windows Flip 3D, which was Windows Key plus Tab. And that still exists. They don't call it that anymore. But that brings up a static screen, which, by the way, is the same screen you would get if you tap that task view button I get rid of all the time.
Yeah.
And it shows you thumbnails for all of your open windows.
So but you don't keep the task view button either.
Well, no, you don't need it. Yeah, so the point of the three things that I remove are all still available even when you remove them, if you want them to be. I don't ever access Cortana, but there's a keyboard shortcut if you want to use it. There's a keyboard shortcut for Task View, which is Windows Key plus Tab. And then if you just type Windows Key and start typing, it will bring up that same search interface. You don't have to take up space for any of that stuff. It's kind of, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can get rid of it. It's nice.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I think I've told you this. I almost never use keyboard shortcuts because I can't remember them. The only two I use are Control C, Control V for cutting and pasting. And then now I use the Windows key period to emoji. That's it.
Oh, that is an amazing.
They're the only two I use. I don't know any others. I literally do not.
I feel like I just got stabbed in the brain.
Paul's wiping his head in shock.
The oldest keyboard shortcuts in the world and the newest one.
And the newest. I'm just that kind of a person.
Skip the 35 years in
all
between.
The useful ones that are productivity ones,
So you don't do like Control S to save or?
I didn't even know that was a shortcut.
What?
I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I prefer not to move my hand off the keyboard if I can do so.
Yeah.
And even like I switched to Affinity Photo recently, and the keyboard shortcuts in this thing are so excellent. Even for photo manipulation, where basically for me, a lot of the times it's like a 16:9 crop, followed by a resizing, followed by a save as, it can be done completely with the keyboard. That is for someone like me, like that is huge. It's
gold.
Awesome.
Gold, man. It's gold.
You know what, though? You have to decide what you fill your brain up with, right? Like, your brain is full of keyboard shortcuts. Mine is full of code names. So you have to decide which is the more important thing to you in your workflow. Right?
By that, people sometimes have been talking to me about something I don't care about, and I tell them, please, you're squeezing out a childhood memory. This is not important.
Exactly.
that's fair. I mean,
you know what I mean?
Anywho.
Wait a minute. Mary Jo, you're typing along. You're writing your article in Notepad. You're typing along. And you want to save the article. You take the mouse and move it up to File and Save.
I do.
You don't do Control S.
No.
Or even Alt FS.
I don't even know what that is. I have no idea what that is.
That's an interesting
one. Are we going to have a remedial keyboard shortcut class here? Because there's a lot of wonder out there for you to...
But you don't need them.
It's like the time I sat there as my daughter watched The Shining for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And in the middle of the movie, she said, "What Red Room? What is Red Room?" And I paused the movie and I thought, my God, I'm going to witness this kid see this for the first time.
It's so exciting.
Tell you about the wonders of Control S. It's the same kind of thing. It's been around now, as long as The Shining.
Yeah, but I just never worked that into my workflow. I just never did.
It seems like a lot of work to pick up the mouse.
Yeah.
Well, or you use your trackpad if you're not using a mouse, right? It's pretty straightforward.
Do you use Control CVX?
No, I don't miss that.
Wait a minute. I'm having the vapors. Hold on. Wait a minute.
What is it? What is it?
Oh, my God. What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. CVX?
Paul?
Control CVX?
No, just Control C.
That sounds like a
no, Control,
mouse, man.
Control X, Control C, Control, X is, Control yeah. V. Control X is cut.
Oh, you're talking
Control
about the difference.
C.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I do no, Control C, do Control those. V. Use but those ones C, I do.
Control. Oh, yeah. Thank God.
Cut and paste. I do that.
Control P to print.
No.
Windows key plus R for the run dialogue.
Control
Shift. Which might go to the run dialogue.
Screen F4. Come right. on.
Windows guys, key plus
guys,
A.
Guys, you guys
up
do more complex things than I do.
Windows key plus P no. brings up for the presentation.
You know, Microsoft sent me a note yesterday because I was complaining about something, and they're like, so could you do this for us? Go to RegEdit. I'm like, nope.
Oh,
I already am going to tell you that is a no.
Not going to do it.
Actually, you'd like RegEdit. You can only use it with the mouse.
Yeah, I just don't
well,
want to
I mean,
be.
You could
I said,
navigate
I said,
with
you know, me using RegEdit, this is just already That's, a bad idea.
That sounds risky.
Idea.
Sounds dangerous.
It does. It really does.
Well, like, you admit that there is a keyboard in front of your computer, right? And that
I use it to
Let's
type.
Start with
like,
first principles.
You know, yeah. Like it was
See the
meant
keys.
To be used. You know, all those control keys, you have to kind of look over control and find
You're
it.
You're a touch typist. You don't have to look at it. You don't have to look at it.
Your hands settle on, what is it, F and J, right, with on your index
yes.
fingers. And then you kind of, you know, once you've reached those little, you feel little divots in the keys, you know where you are. And then, no? Okay.
Yeah, but I like to just know what I'm doing. Like when I need to save, go to the save button.
I like to know what I'm doing, Mary Jo Foley.
I think knowing what you're doing is overrated. I'll just say that. And...
I do too I for many things, but yeah.
Okay.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, so I know. I'm admitting it. I don't use shortcut keys. Woo.
Well you do Control C V and
except
X,
for a couple.
Cut copy and paste. That's good. Okay. Yeah. That's
I think one of the more interesting things that's happened in recent years is how they've added a ton of Windows key shortcut key strokes, really? Like the Windows key plus whatever.
Yeah, those are very useful. Those are worth learning because they really do kind of speed you through.
Actually, so Windows key plus V, if you turn on the clipboard history, allows you to choose between different items in your clipboard instead of using Control V.
Nice. Yep. Nice.
Right? There's a tip there.
There's a tip. Huh? That's really, I didn't know that one. I didn't know that
Well,
one.
Anywho. To circle back to something we were talking about approximately 2 hours ago. Alt-Tab, which is a goofy name for a feature, but it is literally the keyboard combination, which was briefly called Windows Flip, is a way to switch between running apps.
Yes.
Really open Windows. And so if Microsoft goes through and has changed, they're going to add it at least to Edge tabs. I would presume it'd be kind of a feature for any browser, but let's just say Edge tabs. There's some controversy there for sure because it's a different style of navigation, but... I don't know. The more I think about it, like I think that actually makes some sense. Like I think that will work.
So, do you like it because of PWAs? Is that why?
Yeah, because a lot of what I'm doing on the web, and I think a lot of what other people are doing too, is are apps, or either are literally apps or something that people would think of as being the same as apps. You know,
right?
I'm on Gmail or Google Calendar or Twitter, which are in browser tabs. Or I'm on the New York Times website, which, you know, is a web app, really. I mean, it's, you know, a thing I might want to switch to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's good. You know what? You try new things, unlike me.
you be you, Paul.
This is not a new thing, Mary Jo. This stuff has been around since.
No, I mean, when it gets at, when the browser gets added to the set of things, you might try it. You might like it. You have new workflow. just give me Notepad. Give me Notepad and my mouse and get off my Alcantara lawn.
All right. Okay, by the way, when are we going to see all these fabulous new changes?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't know.
We don't know. Both Alt-Tab and the new Start Menu stuff is being tested in, not the Fast Ring, but the dev channel now is what they call it. And that means it's not tied to any Windows version. So presumably the first it could appear is actually early next year in 20H1. But like I suggested, this is not something Microsoft's ever done, but I think the Windows Start Menu refreshing or whatever they're calling it is so minor.
I don't see why they couldn't add anytime. Yeah, but
they probably won't, like Mary Jo said, but
it's a lot of testing for that.
It's not just not pinned to a certain release. There is also a chance of something's in the dev channel that it will never show up in any release.
Right. And this is something that's technically kind of always been the case or has long been the case, but people have been so burned when they've announced a feature like sets, started testing it in the Fast Ring, and then it disappeared, and they said, we'll come back later, and it never did. Yeah.
No.
So
and it just went
now
away.
They're just saying, look, this is why we're not going to say it's, you're not testing 21H1, even though technically you probably really are, right? I mean, for the most part, but features could come and go. And don't worry, after they release it, there'll be like 18 known issues that never came up during the beta. So, you know, that's
wrong. Yep.
Alt is Control S is not a thing for you. That is.
Isn't that wild?
Is that save? Is that save?
Yeah, save.
No, never done that.
It's mnemonic. Yeah. It's even mnemonic.
You know what? Yeah. Doesn't Notepad just automatically save now? Or am I wrong about that?
Paul's probably.
And when a file hasn't been saved, you have an asterisk in the name of it.
See, I got in trouble recently for freaking out. No, Mary Jo, that is not a feature of Notepad, but it is a feature of my Notepad. So, yes, I added autosave.
A lot of editors do those backup, you know, automatic backup files.
Right. Like Word does now. Like,
Word does.
Yeah, Office apps do it.
Yeah.
I still save because I'm always scared, you know.
Yeah, no, because anyone who's been writing over a long period of time has lost something at one point. The electricity went out or whatever it is. And you...
Notepad does have autosave. I just looked it up.
Does it really? Okay.
According to the Times of India. Oh, wait a minute.
It does not.
No, it does not have autosave.
It does.
Times of India had a confusing headline. But there is a Notepad utility called Notepad Autosave that'll do it for you.
Mm. There's also an app called .NET Pad that's written by someone you know who
does autosave.
Yeah.
Is that the Rot Pad you're talking about?
Yes. it's a nice little app, you know. Anyway.
Apparently Notepad, though, it looks like will save stuff in the app data roaming folder.
Oh, that's... Yeah, good luck with that.
Good luck finding it.
Yeah, that's not great. No. Then you're like, where is it? I saved it.
I think those are recovery files, like temp files.
Yeah.
Thank you, Times of India. Once again, the Times of India to the rescue.
Yeah, exactly. I can't tell you how many times I've relied on that
publication. They are so great for that kind of thing. I think that guy, Woody, writes for him. It's an Ask Sanjeev column. It's almost the same.
It's almost as good. Woody Leonard.
Yeah, almost as good as Woody Leonard. How's Windows 10 on ARM doing now that Apple is going to Apple Silicon? I'm sure pedal to the metal for Windows on ARM, right?
If it's metal, it's a soft metal, Leo, because. I'm surprised. I'm predisposed to like this. I want to put my bias out front and center. I want this to work.
Yes.
And this is I'm testing a laptop now that's based on that Snapdragon 8cx chip. So this is the most powerful one that Qualcomm makes today. It's probably roughly analogous to the SQ1 chip that Microsoft, is that what it's called? Yeah, the SQ chip one that Microsoft has in the Surface Pro X. If you live in a magical wonderland where all you're doing is using the built-in apps and Edge, which is native to ARM64, it's fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But if you have to run anything in emulation, it is horrible. And it's like, it bugs me how horrible it still is. One thing I, speaking of that Notepad app, one thing we lost during a backup was I'd written a short series of articles about like a UWP version of the app. And I had to wait to republish them because we had something wrong with the part of our editor that shows code. It doesn't really matter. But anyway, I started posting those yesterday again, you know, reposting them. And I thought, well, I'll use the Windows 10 on ARM computer because I can make a native ARM 64 version of the app. It runs Visual Studio. Visual Studio is 32-bit. It's impossible. And I don't mean it's literally impossible. I suppose if you had infinite patience and could avoid scratching out your eyeballs, you'd be fine. But it is not just slow. It's like it's so slow it causes bugs where the UI freezes and changes. You know, terrible. Like if you're familiar with an app like Microsoft Word is a good example where it doesn't have a standard toolbar or what do you call it? A title bar at the top of the application with the same three buttons, et cetera. You know, they style the application surface so that it kind of covers that up and it's its own thing. If you've ever seen an app like that freeze up or whatever, you might have seen like the old taskbar, the title bar comes popping through. And that's what I get a lot on this Windows 10 on ARM system with 32-bit apps. Like it's really upsetting. It's really upsetting. And then, of course, it has the same compatibility issues as before. You know, if you don't have a 32-bit x86 version of an app, you can't run it. You know, so Affinity Photo, I was just talking about, it doesn't work.
How is Photoshop Elements? How's the 5G anyway?
So I live in rural Pennsylvania, and it's a little bit closer to 2.5G. You can get LTE here, and it does work. It works. I mean, it works. And it's nice that it works because for whatever reason, the Wi-Fi on this particular device has a hard time connecting when I open it up to my home network. So I'm on 4G probably briefly, you know, until it finally connects. I don't know. The computer itself is fantastic. Like this is a nice computer.
Yeah. Lenovo, this looks like a ThinkPad basically. It's interesting because this is the 8CX, which is supposed to be the desktop class.
Yeah. I guess if you accept the fact that a Raspberry Pi is a desktop computer, maybe it just doesn't. The last time I tested one of these was 2 years ago. I was surprised it was that long. And there's been a couple of generations of chips that have come between. The 850 happened. This was originally called the Snapdragon 1000. It became the 8CX. We have the SQ1. There's supposed to be an S, what do you call it, 8CX Plus coming soon or something. I don't know. I don't know. It's disappointing. And it's also goofy. Like, I realize no one's really going to use this as a developer box, but because Visual Studio sort of works, I was like, well, this is cool. I can, I'll get Flutter going. You know, Flutter is the Google thing. So Flutter requires you to download a giant zip file and put it in a certain place, add it to the path. You add the tooling to Visual Studio through some extensions. But you actually have to have Android Studio running too, because that's how you get the virtual machines for the phones, for the devices and the Android tooling. And guess what? Android Studio is 64-bit only. So you go through all this stuff to make something work. And then you get to the end. It's like, oh yeah, it's not going to work.
This is, this is a 32-bit chip. It's not a 64-bit chip.
It's a 64-bit ARM chip, but it can only run 32-bit Intel software.
The emulator is 32. I get it.
Yeah.
That's not really good.
So yeah, there was a new Qualcomm chip today, right? New Qualcomm 865 Plus.
That's right.
There's no Windows 10 PCs with this in it, right?
This is a phone.
No, so those chipsets have diverged, right? So in the very first version, if you think of that number, 865.
Yeah.
One generation ago was an 855, an 845, an 835. Yep. The very first chip that Microsoft and Qualcomm put in a PC was that 835. So whatever number of years ago that is, that was woefully underpowered in computers. And what they discovered was they needed to adapt the hardware to make it run 32-bit emulated Intel software better. And so we got, I think the 850 was a derivative of the probably 845. I don't remember exactly. And then the 8CX is a derivative, I think, of the 855.
Okay.
But they're not the same.
And some are for phones and some are for PCs, right? Like that's the divergence.
They're not using the same chips for the same different things anymore. So Qualcomm makes special chips for wearables, the IoT. They're getting out of IoT. Different types of products. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Because, you know, it made me wonder about the Surface Duo, right? Like, because we believe that's based on the 855, I think. But is there a chance they could switch the processor to be something better?
Yeah, sure.
Depends when they ship it, I guess.
There's this thing called Apple Silicon I'm very high on.
Maybe Panos can talk to Tim Cook
Yeah, that's never, you know, Apple's never got it.
They
would never.
I know.
No way.
So. No, I know.
But that's another confusion, you know. So as Apple switches to Apple Silicon, people are saying, well, you know, Apple's not going to do boot camp, but they could. They could put Windows 10 on ARM on there. And it's like, guys, these are completely incompatible chipsets. These are not the same thing.
Right.
Like, I get that they're based on ARM, but even the name Windows 10 on ARM is a misnomer. It's really Windows 10 on Snapdragon. It's the Snapdragon.
Oh, really? It's that tightly tied to Snapdragon.
Yep.
And
Qualcomm actually calls it that, but Microsoft pretended, you know, when Terry Myerson announced this, you know, it was like, well, we're going to go with Snapdragon, well, Qualcomm, but we're going to open it up to other, you know, all those other ARM chip makers everyone knows and loves. And it's never going to happen. Why, you know?
Well, I guess this is probably something for Microsoft, but I wonder how much of the code hooks into Snapdragon specific stuff.
I think the further we get into it, the more that that's the case.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's much, think about like, you know, the original vision for NT was, write as much high-level code as you can. Don't do assembly language if you can avoid it, because we don't want to be tied to Intel. They were going to do MIPS and PowerPC and Spark, I think, was one of the ones, and eventually Itanium. There's all these platforms they were going to support. They did support, you know, for a time. But, of course, what you discover is the performance is terrible. It's the same problem.
Yeah.
So in Windows NT, they started writing a lot of it in Intel-specific assembly language. Eventually, they started moving things like the graphics subsystem into the kernel, which introduces instability, but is much faster. And I think if you look at the development of Windows 10 on ARM, and I don't have any insider information about how this works or anything, but I mean, I think you'll find something similar where originally the vision was very high-minded, and now they're like, no, we just need this to work. You know, the application performance for emulation is terrible. We're going to have to contort the software and the chips to make this better. And I think these things are just getting further and further apart and more, not less Snapdragon specific.
Well, that would explain why Apple never said boot camp was going to come. In fact, at one point said, no, there won't be any boot camp.
Yeah.
Never showed Windows in emulation, but they showed Linux in emulation. You're saying there isn't a Windows on generic ARM at all.
Such thing.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's in a lab or something. I mean, but no, this product is literally for Qualcomm.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that. That's not good news.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, if it makes it work better on the platform, it's good. Right?
Well, is it? Is it, though? I mean, is it making it better?
Yeah.
How's it working on that 8CX?
In the future, someday. One day.
No, but that's a dumb thing to tie yourself to Qualcomm. I don't.
Well, but we got to remember the mentality.
They're working with other ARM vendors, aren't they? I think they are. In the IoT space and the server space, they are.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm talking about Windows 10.
It makes me wonder if you'll even be able to run Windows in a virtual machine on Apple Silicon.
So I think you will, but what you'll be running is Intel, and it will be
emulated. An Intel emulator. Holy moly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know they only showed Linux. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they made a point of explaining what that was, but that thing had to have been running emulated. I mean, virtualization itself is emulation, I guess, but, you know, it's not like there's an Apple Silicon version of some version of Linux. So whatever that thing was.
No, but there is generic ARM Linux. Not Qualcomm ARM Linux, but generic ARM Linux.
Yeah, but why would that be better on Apple Silicon because it was ARM?
I think so.
In virtualization? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, so...
They didn't say, Microsoft, did they? Yeah, that's interesting. I'd love to know that.
So Let me interject something, and I'm not 100% sure I'm right here, but I thought I saw people tweeting during the Apple keynote that they showed Windows 10 virtualized on the platform. They did, right?
I don't remember.
I remember.
It wasn't in boot camp, but it was another way.
Boot camp is not happening. But
it was Parallels, right?
Yeah, there's no reason. Windows can't run in a virtual environment like Parallels. There's no reason. It just might not be. You know, here's the way to think of it. The Mac used to run on PowerPC. There used to be a company called Kinectix that made a virtual PC that Microsoft bought. The Parallels was around. Those guys offered virtual Windows running in a virtual machine on a PowerPC-based Mac. And Windows, that was not a PowerPC version of Windows. It was Intel. Mm-hmm. So it just didn't run very fast. You know, the theory at the time was like, well, this is better than nothing, which it is. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Yeah. It's just not native. And even if Microsoft made Windows 10 on ARM available on this platform for some reason, it wouldn't be native. Mm-hmm. I mean, God knows what Apple has done to Apple Silicon, not to mention what they're going to do on the Mac.
Yeah.
These things are just getting further and further apart. So I'm sure Parallels and whatever else, if VMware Fusion or whatever comes out, is taking advantage of some... It might even be Rosetta, some Apple subsystem.
No, they've already said it won't work with Rosetta. Rosetta 2. Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever.
You have to rewrite You have to rewrite virtualization to run on ARM, obviously, because virtualization can't run virtually. I guess it could then, at that point, emulate x86.
I don't see why it couldn't. I mean, it's the same problem we've always had, but you have to... virtualize, you know, the hardware. You have to, it's not just running the software. You have to literally virtualize. You have to present something to the virtual machine that makes it think it's on a real computer.
Well, we're going to have to, this remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a TBD because I don't think it's clear from either camp what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It would be very bad for Apple Silicon if you'd, because there's a lot of people, sysadmins, DevOps stuff that you want to have at least some access to Windows. There's a lot of users that have at least one Windows app they need to run.
That's right. So the thing to remember is there are multiple ways to make that happen, and Microsoft and other third parties have things that are or are like Windows Virtual Desktop, where you're just running it from a data center from the cloud.
Yeah, you have to do that.
And by the way, you know, you can run apps that way. I mean, individual apps.
Yeah.
So and Microsoft's got to be completely rewriting Office because they did say Office will run on Apple Silicon.
Yeah. So I bet they wouldn't say they're rewriting it, but I bet what they are, you know, they compile and it doesn't work, you know, and then they look at, God knows, something as complex as Office probably has all kinds of craziness. But yeah, I mean, I think it was important for Apple to show the big players, Adobe, Microsoft, et cetera, on day one.
Right.
We're already had seen some success, getting this thing switched over. But yeah, it's I'm sure that porting effort is monumental. But I'm sure they'll get it. You know, they'll make it work. They did the switch from PowerPC to Intel before Microsoft did on Mac. I mean, you know, they're doing it again.
Interesting.
You know what I wonder? When are we going to hear something new about Windows on ARM? Like we haven't heard anything in ages, right?
The only thing new to hear, though, is the hardware. Like, the hardware is the only thing that's interesting. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's two things. The
other 64-bit, one is, right?
X64 compatibility, right? So, those are the two big milestones. I was researching what I had written about ARM, Windows 10 on ARM, you know, years ago, and I saw something that I still kind of rings true, which is that if this thing works, it's going to be the most boring thing in the world because there's nothing to talk about. You know, if it worked, you could just buy that computer that I'm reviewing and it performs whatever it performs, but everything works. I install a printer and it just works. My 64-bit apps that, you know, normal user wouldn't know, 64, 32, whatever, they just work. Like if it just worked, there'd be nothing to talk about, you know? So the things that stand in the way from it just working, actually there's three things and they're going to solve at least two of them. One is performance, you know, ever faster chips. The other one is X64 compatibility. But the final frontier is drivers.
Yeah.
And that's something I've experienced. It's not a showstopper, but, you know, on all of my computers, I have this HP software that controls the all-in-one printer that does scanning and faxing and printing with all kinds of crazy dialogues. And you can print. I haven't tried the other stuff, but you can print to it from Windows 10 on ARM, but you don't get all the controls because that stuff's part of the driver set that's Intel-based. So you just get class drivers, which is fine. Honestly, it's fine.
Yeah.
I want to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to get a 2004 update because I continue to hear howls. You know? And we talked last week because it had just happened about the codec update through the store. There are a lot of businesses that do not allow the Microsoft Store on their PCs. So that's really an interesting conundrum, but I'm sure you'll have all sorts of things to say about it when we continue. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. I think probably a lot of you working from home say, oh, I don't need a VPN. I'm not going to that open coffee shop Wi-Fi anymore. I'm not traveling anymore. What do I need a VPN? Oh, you might still want to have a VPN. Oh, yeah. Because as you work from home these days, you don't have the protection of the IT department. And so having a VPN is actually a very nice thing to have. I'll give you a couple of examples. For instance, if you're not using a VPN, your internet service provider, and by the way, this is completely legal, I think many of them do it, can collect all the places you go and sell that to marketers. That's valuable. That's gold. They make money on that. That's completely legal. And we know many do that. There's also the issue, of course, you know, we're running through our Netflix collections pretty well. It wouldn't be nice to be able to go to another country, maybe go to England and watch Doctor Who, or go to Japan and watch anime to your heart's content. Well, you can, because ExpressVPN works with Netflix. Fire up Netflix, push the big button on ExpressVPN, say, I want to be in England. Refresh Netflix. Suddenly, all those Doctor Who episodes are available from Netflix UK. It's kind of amazing. It works not just with Netflix, but Hulu and a variety of other services as well. You know, geographic restrictions are one of a number of things that ExpressVPN does better than anybody else because it's fast, so you can watch HD video without any hiccups. Literally yesterday, I was looking in the settings on my iPad, and it said, oh, the VPN's on. I said, wait, what? For the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been using ExpressVPN on my iPad, had no idea. Everything was absolutely as fast as always. But I was protected. I mean, I turned it on at one point. I don't remember when. It's been weeks. And it's just been on the whole time. I love that. It's just a great way to secure your internet data, secure your privacy. One button. Not using ExpressVPN is like leaving your front door unlocked every time you go out. Most of the time, that's fine, except for the one time when somebody does come marching in. ExpressVPN is affordable. Its privacy is top-notch. They do not log. They've had this independently audited by third parties. In fact, they are so kind of committed to this, they actually wrote a special server tool called Trusted Server. When you press the button and you go to an ExpressVPN server, so you normally you just pick the one closest to you. It does that automatically. So you turn it on. That server that you're going to, in my case, it'd be San Francisco, spins up in RAM only, the Trusted Server. You run through that the whole time in RAM only. It's set up in such a way it can't write to the hard drive. It cannot log. It can't. It physically can't. And then when you're done, it's gone. And so is every trace of you. No record is kept. By the way, that was audited as well by an independent third party. And they said, yep, that's exactly how it works. So my only question is, why aren't you using it? If right now we can get you down to less than $7 a month. By the way, I know everybody always said, oh, well, Leo, I got a free one. Yeah, don't use that free one. Trust me. It's expensive to run a VPN service. And if they're not charging you, they're selling you, often by inserting ads into your stream or collecting all the things you do on there. You don't want that. You want ExpressVPN. It's hard to find the right VPN. This is it. I found it for you. ExpressVPN.com/windows. It's the only one I use. You'll get an extra 3 months if you go to that address and sign up for a year. You'll get 15 months for the price of 12. expressvpn.com/windows. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for supporting Windows Weekly. They've been a great sponsor and a great support during these difficult times. Thank you for supporting us by going to expressvpn.com/windows. Just because you're not traveling around doesn't mean you don't need protection. expressvpn.com/windows. So the pain continues with 2004. What's your sense of it?
It's like COVID. I thought we were on top of things.
I know.
And then it just squirted out.
I agree.
Yep.
No, I feel like we keep seeing things get resolved that were on the issues list. And then every time something gets resolved, another thing pops up that we didn't know about. Right?
Yep. Yep.
So there was
Microsoft has never really come out. You know, in the past, when there have been problems with these releases, people like you and I have kind of complained about it or pointed it out or whatever. Yeah. And then inevitably, there's some kind of a Microsoft post where they explain how the process is working. And, you know, we learned from our telemetry and blah, 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 whatever it is. And they haven't even done that, you know?
No.
Mm-mm. It's been kind of quiet.
No. So this is a one you discovered that our people over at ZDNet wrote about. The error message that comes up: this PC cannot be upgraded to Windows 10. Your PC settings are not supported in this version of Windows 10. You got that message, right?
I got it on which one was it? I can't remember. I'm sorry. I have different computers I've been working on, but it might have been an old HP. It was on an older version of Windows. Yeah. It literally offers you the update. So 2004 was offered. I started the download. I had it on the side, did other things. And then about 25 or 30% of the way in, the message that you're referring to kind of pops up on the screen. And it looks like it's going to give you a way to kind of triage it and figure out what to do about it.
Yep.
No, it just says there's something wrong with your settings and there's no
fix. It seems to be drivers, right? Doesn't it? Third party drivers?
I have no way.
Or is it not related to drivers?
I couldn't tell. I have no idea.
Yeah. Our ZDNet folks said hardware drivers are still wreaking havoc. So I'm like, okay, is it hardware driver related? And this is another one of these issues that's when you look at the list of things that Microsoft posted as being issues for Windows 2004, it's not there.
Right.
It's not on their list.
It's also a terrible message because it implies change a setting, but then they don't tell you what setting. If it's
Which setting?
It should say drivers.
It should. It doesn't give you enough information. And so then people try to get around it. They're like, oh, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do this, right? But you can't get around it.
I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like this before, you know? I mean, I'm glad in a way I'm not the only one, I guess, but not that I want other people to suffer, but I don't understand. I don't know. I don't understand anything anymore.
No, people are getting it on Reddit. People are posting about this on Reddit. So it's happening to more than just a couple people, you know? It's happening to multiple people.
I checked on multiple machines over the weekend, and I still have many more to go. But, you know, Surface Go 2, for example, you get that little cute little picture of the computer. It says, hey, there's a cool thing coming. You're not getting it, but it's coming.
Wait a minute. They still haven't updated the Surface?
I have an update on that.
Is yours updated yet? Your laptop?
No. Nope. Right. Great. So Microsoft posted something at the end of June. It was actually on June 29th, and it said the block has been lifted on devices with always on, always connected, which meant the Surface devices, right? And so it said it'll take up to 48 hours for this to start happening, and then you'll see the update. So every day I go like an idiot and I check for updates just to see if it'll do it. And it won't. And it's not just me. Like almost every Surface owner out there on any model is not getting 2004.
You're not just a seeker now. You're a super seeker.
I'm like a rabid seeker because I'm like, now I want it because you won't give it to me. Right.
Yeah.
And why won't you?
Yeah, I want it. I wouldn't be
so
such
strange.
A hurry, Mary Jo.
I'm not in a hurry, actually. Yeah. Like, especially hearing every day new things popping up. I'm like, maybe I don't know why I'm doing this. It's like Russian roulette. Do I want to try to get the 2004 update? Not really, but I'm going to check. Yeah. And so I've asked every day since July 1, I believe. Every morning, this is my first email to Microsoft. Hey, how about those Surfaces that still aren't updating to 2004? single day, I just hit the resend. I'm like, any update today? Nothing. My guess about what is happening is there's something else besides always on, always connected issue blocking them, but they don't want to say this publicly. And so instead, they're just leaving this message out there saying the issue's been resolved and we're unblocking the devices that had this problem, but they don't tell you anything else. Like, when do you have other issues? Are there other drivers that are blocking you? They don't tell you any of that. And so we're just all like, I don't know a single person who has a Surface of any kind, like Go, Surface Book, Surface Laptop, Surface Pro X. I don't know anyone who has gotten Windows 10 2004 through like Windows Update. Right.
Let me think about that.
They can't get it manually. They can't get it through Windows Update. Some people have forced it, and I've heard people who are forcing it having problems. I've had people telling me if they take OneDrive away, like uninstall OneDrive and then get the update and then reinstall OneDrive, it works. But I'm like, I'm not doing that. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
You know, you can't use those wild third-party apps that are so unpredictable. Who knows what they're going to do? Yeah, I can understand that.
I just, like Paul said, you know what I would like to see? I would just like them either to call me and say, all right, we're ready to tell you what went wrong here, or to post something and say, okay, 2004 didn't work out as smooth an update as we thought.
But you know, my cynical take on that is, let's say they do that. They've done that for every release where something has gone wrong. And so what? Like, you guys, all you ever do is figure out what went wrong last time, and then something new happens every time.
Let me argue on their behalf. You have so many people, such a big installed base. What is it? How many people are in Windows 10? A billion almost?
Close
to a billion. Even the smallest, tiniest problem is going to have thousands of people up in arms. There's never going to be an update to any version of Windows 10 that isn't going to have thousands of people complaining. Yeah.
So maybe what you should do is release those versions once every 3 years instead of once instead of twice.
That would be one way.
So now we're going back to the old days.
Yeah. Well,
But to put it in perspective, it's probably not a massive. I mean, there are a lot of little problems.
It's not a massive number of people. I would say the Surface thing, though. The Surface thing is big.
It's their hardware.
And it's big. It's their hardware.
That's a little
weird. Like, didn't a lot of people test this during the Insider program? You would assume, right?
No? How the hell are we having this conversation in 2020?
Again? I know. Seriously. So how come we are having it every single episode of Windows Weekly?
Seriously. Like, is this all that our world has become?
Yeah.
I know.
Jeez. You can't. Software maker can't update software. What is going on? I know. It's crazy.
No. You know, it's just, I don't know why. Maybe it wouldn't make other people feel better if they were public about this, but I would feel better if they just said, okay, here's exactly why we didn't find this problem with Surface devices before we rolled out the update.
They may not.
And I'd be like, okay, thanks for coming clean, Microsoft.
Right. You think
that answer may not be something they want to communicate publicly.
I know.
Obviously they don't. That's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yep. Yeah. So I don't know anybody with any Surface who has 2004 who got it through an automatic channel or manually without doing some finagling.
Wow.
See, that one I'm trying to – I have updated computers. I feel like I must have gotten 2004 on at least a computer, but I
– You mean a Surface? Some Surface?
Oh, no. On a Surface?
Oh, no. It's coming to other computers for sure. Like, other people are getting it. I hear from a lot of people who got it.
I don't know. I have a Surface Laptop 1 and 2, and I don't think those have gotten it either.
No. Mm-mm. Surface Book 2, Surface Book 3, nope. Surface Pro X, nope. I got to go and change the headline in my post that says it's unblocked because it's not.
Yeah. It's unblocked.
Wait. And here's somebody, Taro Elhonen. I got 2004 for Surface Pro 4 via Windows Update.
Okay. I mean, that's.
Okay. So it happens. It can.
It's an older one, though, too. Yeah. It can happen.
It is. Yep.
I don't know.
It's puzzling, right? It's very puzzling.
He's probably not using Notepad.
Oh, I don't know.
Notepad is probably all you can run in the Surface Pro 4.
Yeah. I just want to know. I just have a morbid curiosity at this point to figure out why this happened and why it is happening.
Why?
It's only July. What's the problem?
they could just blame the pandemic. They could. They could just say, you know, the pandemic, and everybody would be like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
But they could, but, you know, there's been all kinds of problems before the pandemic, too.
I know. And there have. Right? Yep. Right. Right.
Windows as a service is a lie. And you can easily find Microsoft using this official phrase where they say Windows is a service. No, it isn't. You're pretending it's a service and you're updating it like it's a service and it's not working. It's not a service.
What is it then?
It's a legacy desktop platform. It's it runs on the most diverse possible set of hardware. And it needs to be taken care of. You can't just start jamming updates down its throat every month. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's too fragile for that. It just doesn't work. There's so much. There's no evidence of it working, and there's plenty of evidence of it not working.
Yeah.
Well, let's stop pretending that it's working. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this too clear-headed for most people? I don't know.
I know.
Facts.
Well, but how
and the more they don't comment, the worse it makes it for me. Like if they just said something, anything,
I do feel that being transparent about this is important for sure.
Anyway, doesn't matter what we think about that because it doesn't seem to be helping at all.
Right. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's move along.
I know. Let's just say, okay, that's where we're at with 2004. We have better things to talk about.
Not that more anybody needs it. Nobody needs it,
huh?
Nobody needs it.
You don't.
Right, that's the other thing.
Only if you want WSL 2.
Well, WSL 2. Like that's one of the things I would like, but nobody really needs it. Yeah.
So, buy a new computer. New computers have 2004 on them, but it works great.
Huh. Mm.
I've gotten several of those.
Maybe that's
already,
the way to think of it is... It's for new. It's a new computer thing. You just wouldn't. Yeah. That's how we used to get Windows updates,
right? If you want to feel better about things, I just remind yourself that Apple to date has issued approximately 117 versions of iOS 13. So it's not always greener on the other side of the fence, right? Like Apple has had huge quality problems with iOS 13 over time. I think between the time it was released last September and December,
But Paul,
I think they released like 13 different versions of it.
But Paul, I got to say, their own hardware, it always seems to work pretty well on their own hardware. I'm just saying, they've been able to update their own hardware pretty effectively.
Surprising.
I'm
switching to Apple.
They're not really a lot of big showstoppers. It's not like, one of the reasons that iPhones are kept up to date is because people don't suffer too much when they update them.
Mm. Sure. Right. No, that's true. I one of the biggest problems I have with Windows as a service is, aside from the fact that it doesn't work at all, is that there is a model for updating mobile platforms that both Apple and Google follow, which is that typically you release like the one major release a year. And he updated it. You know, Apple had to update bug fixes, whatever. There are minor updates throughout the year. Apple does add features here and there. Google pretty much doesn't. But then there are security updates every month, And for the most part, these types of things are kind of not disruptive. You do have to reboot your phone, to get a feature up or a version upgrade, whatever. I just feel like we update Windows like it's become our careers. Like this is all we do.
You know what? I think IT pros have it right. They do they just skip the first one of the year, right? They're just like, That's just a version that guinea pig consumers are testing. And after in the second half, we'll get that one.
I think the reason that Windows as a service was inflicted on all of us as individuals was because of IT departments that were not upgrading, not even every 3 years. They were upgrading every 8 years or whatever it was.
True. That's not even that's not even speculative. That's correct.
Right?
That is why. Yep.
But maybe they were onto something, right? You don't jump out of a perfectly working airplane. You don't fix something that's not broken.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
We're caught in this kind of nether region between using the computer as a tool, which is what it is, and being enthusiasts and just wanting the cool new thing because it's cool and it's new, But I don't know, like, how many times you get beaten down by this stuff before you just sort of want it to work, you know?
Okay, I'm going to cheer you up. Let's talk about Microsoft 365.
Yeah, there we go. Now, this is actually the first story we have in the notes is actually very interesting. Yeah. It's about all kinds of new stuff coming to Teams between now and the end of the year. So, Leo, click on the first link and look at this weird picture. This is a new view in Teams that they're adding. It's called Together Mode, Auditorium View.
And this is what, when you watch a baseball game next month, this is what the crowd's going to look like.
Yeah. So it makes you see everybody in a common space. So instead of having individual windows where you feel disconnected and like I have nothing to do, now we're all in one big auditorium
together.
This is
what soccer games are going to look like in Spain.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That does not work for me. I'm sorry.
I don't think it works for me either, but somebody else said, well, you're going to pay attention because you can see that everybody is looking at you, like looking head on at you, and well, they'll see true. If you're not paying attention.
Yeah. Can I imagine them naked? Will that is that going to be a feature, a filter? That is hysterical.
Is that a feature?
Could the gentleman in row 3, seat 7, please put on a blanket or something?
Wow.
Yeah. So what they did was they used AI technology. They said this thing called AI segmentation technology, and they made it so that it feels like with a common background that you're all together. And the first view is this auditorium view. But they said in the future, there will be other views, not just this auditorium view.
I want to do it just because it's funny.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe you'd like it. Maybe you'd get used to it. Can you get
it's
up from your seat
soon.
And walk to the podium? I mean,
I know. Right. Yeah. What happens then, right? If you leave and go get a drink of water or whatever, I don't know. Wow. Yeah. So this is going to start rolling out really soon to people with Teams and be generally available for everybody with a business account. I think in August. So everybody's going to see this really soon.
That's amazing.
If you want this.
Saying- You guys, you're not going back to your office, just so we're clear.
That's
never happened.
This is very, almost weirdly dystopian.
Like, it kind of is.
This is the future. We're all going to be in our little white cubicles. Oh, yeah. It's so strange.
It's weird. Yeah. It looks very weird, but the first time you see it, you're like, I don't know. But they showed a view of it also. I didn't put a picture of this, but like in a classroom situation where you have kids who are in the classroom.
That
like
might make
like
more
say,
sense. That, might
that looks
more
a
sense.
Little more sensible to me.
Kids are inventive. They'll be doing like putting their fingers up behind other people and virtually flicking ears and stuff.
Yeah. So that's just one of the new features. They talked about a whole
so
bunch
there's
of
a large gallery views. I want to see the classroom. Actually, is that in there?
It won't
the
be that part
picture, I don't think it's in there. See that thing you're looking at now? That's it's a thing called dynamic view. So dynamic view just means you can arrange the meeting from your perspective to look the way you want more easily. You know, like when you have like a bunch of like either everybody's in a gallery view or you want to have some people bigger, you want to have people on the right.
I'd like
that's handy,
a nice feature.
Right?
Yeah, I like that.
Yep. But the one I'm scared of, I'll tell you, more than the auditorium view. They talked about adding support in Teams meetings for up to 1,000 participants.
Well, we need that. I hate to say it.
But how, that's though? What, like, how is that going to work?
We do our all-hands meeting on Zoom or Meet right now.
Yeah.
There's only
how many people, though?
But, I think maybe 20. But I just think there are companies that would like to do all-hands meetings.
Yeah. Probably Microsoft.
Yeah.
Among them. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and up to 1,000
participants. 1,000 people for interactive. It's 20,000 people for non-interactive.
To watch a presentation.
Like a presentation. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to do 20,000. You could stream it on YouTube and a million could watch it.
You could. That's just more like a almost like a webinar kind of thing.
Yeah, you might want to keep it in the company.
Right.
Chat bubbles. This is something they already have in some other competitive apps and in Skype. They've got like, you know how chat right now in Teams is hidden. Like when you're in the middle of a meeting, you have to open chat. Like now you'll be able to have chat bubbles come up, and so you can see what people are chatting about while the meeting has happened. I'm like, that could work, or that could be super distracting. I'm not sure which. I feel like that that will be. But the most unusual one, and I wonder what Paul thinks about this, the teams display stuff. So they're creating this new category of devices that to me almost sound like the Echo Show, except for business. And it's going to use Cortana to interact so you can do things like join the meeting, distribute documents, all these kinds of things. So it's like going to be this little mini display that's this next to your PC. And it's in a way like the next version.
That part I'm a little unclear on, right? Because the line I got stuck on was they said that these things would integrate with Teams on your PC.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to call nonsense on that. That doesn't mean anything. I view this, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, if you look at their video of this, they show somebody with their PC open, and then they have this little Teams display. It's almost like a speaker next to it. So you're talking to that thing instead of your PC. Yeah.
Why?
It's like offloading some of the functionality to this, but I don't know why it wouldn't be integrated into your PC, but yeah.
The way to view this, because I use a Lenovo smart display that runs the Google Assistant stuff that looks a lot like the
it looks like that
device that we have a picture of somewhere. It probably using the same basic shell. It could have a lot of the same interior. It's got a mic and speakers, obviously, video. You can do video calls, whatever.
Yep.
This is just another way to do Teams, right? So I think that the integration, such as it is the same as you have if you're using Teams on your computer and Teams on your phone. The idea being that you're sitting in front of your computer, you've got Teams open, you've got your phone open, and Teams is on the phone, and you get a chat. If you answer that chat on your phone, it's marked as read on your computer. Of course it is. It's an online service. I think that's the level of integration, because this thing is it's just a hardware wrapped around a Teams client, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It's a standalone Teams client. The integration. Why on earth would I want a different device to do Teams when I'm doing, you know, if I'm sitting in front of a computer?
I know. Because Harman Kardon speakers didn't take off, that they're like, we still want to have a business speaker, right? And we want to have
I'm sorry. I'm okay with this thing existing. I guess what I'm saying is I don't see using it when I'm in front of my computer.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I see what you're saying.
And I'm trying to imagine like for an individual, because you have to have some way of signing into this. It has to be you. It might be specific to you. You might not be able to share this with multiple people. I don't know. But presumably there are office scenarios where this would make sense, and then home scenarios, right? I mean, how disruptive would it be if you're sitting in your kitchen making dinner and your little Teams display lights up because someone from work wants to chat to you about some story you wrote?
Yeah.
And and now is this like another way like we have to deal? Now we get to work everywhere? You know, throw one in the bathroom. Maybe you want to have a chat while you're taking a shower or something.
You make sure to shut off your Teams when you're doing that.
Yeah. And they have hardware switches too for mic and camera, which is good. It's fine.
I know. I like that they're paying attention to the privacy aspect, because I think the riskiest thing about these kind of voice activated devices is anybody can walk into your house or your office and just say, show me so-and-so schedule, or show me this or that. And anybody can see it or hear it. And there really isn't a lot of privacy controls on these kinds of things. So I think they're thinking, Microsoft is thinking this about these scenarios more than anybody.
I'm just trying to understand though what this brings to the
table.
Why
you want it. Yeah.
Well, I already have a phone and a computer with Teams on it.
I know. So there's also this thing that exists already called a Teams collaboration bar that I never really understood what that was. And then there are Teams room devices. So those are more like speakerphones in conference rooms, right?
Right, right.
So they're trying to think of all the different possible scenarios of how you would want to interact by voice and what kind of devices you would need or want to have when you're doing that. But the more you talk about the PC integration, the more I'm like, why would you have both together?
If you've installed Teams on your computer, right, you probably have installed Teams.
Yep.
Yeah. So you might have noticed in the beginning of the install, it says at some point, do you want to let your workplace control your computer, basically? I don't remember the exact word.
It does say that. Yeah.
And then you can say no, but you can control this app, right? And that's what you should choose, obviously. Not that your workplace or my workplace is sending down policies that anyone has to worry about or anything, but I mean, That's one thing. So I suppose for people who are working from home using their own computers, they may not want to put Teams on there, or maybe their workplace doesn't feel that that's safe. Mm-hmm. Having a standalone Teams interface could make sense in some cases. Yeah. If this is shareable, it could make sense on a factory floor or in a retail place where, you know, different, maybe it does, it probably doesn't do facial recognition, but maybe there's a different ways to sign in, and it could, you could talk back to the home office or something.
Yeah.
But I'm really struggling to come up. I don't quite understand.
Go and look at the video after the show where Jared Spataro is talking about it. Cause I'm pretty sure they showed it open next to a PC, and I was like, huh.
And I don't, why?
Yeah.
Unless you just don't want Teams on your computer for some reason.
Well, it's pretty slow and big, so maybe.
That's true. Don't like Electron? Buy this hardware. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So those kind of new, these Teams displays, they're coming to the U.S. first before the end of this year. And they say the first one's going to be called the Well, I think this already exists. Lenovo ThinkSmart View device, which I believe is already out there, but they're going to make it a Teams certified Teams display.
I don't get what the market is, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, me neither.
They say next to your desk. I mean, on your desk. I don't.
The problem with the conference room is you need something that works for multiple people, and that's they have microphones and things for that.
Right.
Type of situation. I don't know. I don't know. Like smart displays make sense for individuals and some. We use one as basically a photo display.
Yeah, at home.
Relative, you wanted to chat with
relatives. I mean, the Facebook portal, but I don't see it in business.
Maybe first line workers.
Aren't you sitting?
Like you're saying.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody who's like, say customer support or retail, like, you know, they need to interact with Teams, but they don't have a dedicated computer and they use this, maybe?
Wouldn't be better. I mean, for most of these things are a tablet or something. I don't know. I'll watch
that. That's all it is. It's a tablet on a stand. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it is.
It's a really thick tablet. It's
a tablet
with a big speaker, microphones.
Yeah.
Could be that the microphones are the key selling point, like if it has a Ray mics in it. And,
You know. That's true. Yeah, even if you could get Teams on your computer, you might not have an ideal AV system.
You might not have I mean, people are buying cameras. You know, maybe this is, you know, you get this and that's really your
just
You know what really is? It's kind of funny. It's the video phone finally that
it is for 50 years.
The way you're going to know that you're that guy at work is your coworkers are going to say, "You know what, Bob? We're just going to send you one of these speaker things. Don't worry about it."
you can stay home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Actually, now that I think about it, a dedicated Teams device with a nice camera, nice screen, good array mics. Mm-hmm. You could put a little bit closer to you. You could shut off. That may make a little sense. Plus, you could have your computer working while you're on your conference call.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to play a video game while you're on Teams.
I know. That drives me nuts.
So they made this just for you, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you got to address the scenario.
Actually, it kind of makes – I'm starting now that I'm seeing it a little bit. I could see that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I could see it. I wouldn't mind such a thing. Just one way to get more things in there. You want to talk about office? There's my New Englander coming in. Office.com portal.
So I saw a report that the office.com portal for commercial Microsoft 365 users was getting updated. And so I checked. And on my particular account, I am seeing it. I've heard from a lot of people who are not seeing it. So you still see the old version. And if you're familiar with the portal, there's a version that exists for consumers as well. It kind of has the apps in a grid at the top, and then it does that recent document stuff. It's like the Office app on Windows 10 or whatever. So the new design, the apps are in a kind of a column over on the left, and it's clean looking. Plus, it bumps your documents up to the top, which I think is smart. You still get the little, I don't know what they call it, but a little icon in the corner that gives you the app launcher with all of the apps. Mm-hmm. And whatever. So there's really not that much to say about it. But I posted about it. This guy in the comments said something I hadn't really noticed. He says, "You realize what this looks like, right?" And I guess I'll ask you guys. What does this look like to you? If you product maybe was talking about. No, the new UI, like the arrangement.
No, you have, I was like, saying the Android, Microsoft Android launcher, maybe.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, it looks like Microsoft Teams.
Right? Oh.
Oh, how funny.
Okay.
If you, yeah. Like, yeah. That's actually the UI for Microsoft Teams.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah.
It's all a Teams world now.
Yep.
Wow. That's funny.
I think it looks nice. It's clean, you know.
Yeah. I like that they're moving your most recently accessed documents up everywhere in the Microsoft ecosystem because that is what normal people can't find. Like you say to my mom, here, find this thing you just put in there. And she goes, I don't know how to find it. Yep. Where is it?
Yep.
Right?
In a way, really, this is a little bit like Google Drive, too. I mean, it's kind of has that feature-y, like a browser. It looks like a file browser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I haven't got it yet. I just looked. I don't have it.
Right. That's interesting. I wonder if I did something at some point to get features early or whatever. I know this. I couldn't even tell you where it was, but it's this somewhere in the labyrinth that is Microsoft's, admin console. Yep. There's something for that in there somewhere. But anyway, it's coming. I hope it comes to consumers too. I think it looks nice.
Yeah. Some good news for Duo fans.
Yeah. So this was a very weird story, right? A publication called, I've never even heard of them, CNews, CNEWS.com, reported that Microsoft basically did an acqui-hire, and they hired a bunch of people who work for this company called Movial, M-O-V-I-A-L. So Movial is a Finnish global design and engineering company. And I didn't know this, but Movial, I guess, has been doing some design work with Microsoft for the Surface Duo, which is the Android-based phone. So Microsoft basically hired the people who had been working on the Android stuff for them. And when I got the quote from Microsoft about this, they said, we hired employees across several offices with Movial to boost our Windows and Android development efforts. So I'm not sure where Windows comes in here,
right.
Which is kind of a weird quote. But they hired a bunch of people. I'm not sure if it was 60 or not because of the way they worded things. So they hired some number of people from Movial. They won't say how much they paid for them. They said they hired people who are based in Romania, Taiwan, and the United States. And Windows Central, who went after this story, said this now means that Microsoft is going to have all their Surface Duo operating system stuff be happening in-house instead of having to basically hire designers outside. So, I think Duo is definitely going to happen. I just am curious how the reception for this thing is going to be. And when it's going to come, because Windows Central hears this is coming very soon. Like they're saying it could ship in the next couple months. I haven't heard a date on it. Last date I heard was in time for holiday 2020.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to ship it. And I do feel like this maybe indicates they're serious about it and it won't be a one-off, hopefully. Yeah, and no one's ever heard of this company, until this happened. I mean, there was a little fog of war there, thanks to that first report that you cited. We thought they had purchased the company, but they didn't.
Yeah, it was all very vague. Yeah. And then Microsoft didn't even, when they do any kind of an acquisition, whether it's people or a company, and it's below a certain dollar value, they don't have to publicly disclose that they did it. So maybe this fell beneath that threshold. I'm not really sure, but it was very... It was like pulling teeth to get anything from them about what actually happened here. So,
yeah. It kind of, what it reminded me of once we figured out what it was they were really doing was what Google did with HTC when they kind of purchased that part of the company that had been working with them on Pixel and brought in some number of their employees to work for them directly. It seems like that's.
Why would you hide it?
I don't think they were hiding it.
Embarrassing.
I
think they don't want to talk about Surface stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like they're very
secret. I don't think it was okay, but it didn't warrant a big announcement.
Post, I mean,
I think some local publication from Romania was like, hey, there's a bunch of people here from Finland all of a sudden.
Who just got hired by Microsoft.
Microsoft bought this company. And it's like, you know, they got a quote from a guy from Microsoft Romania.
Yeah.
And it, as it turns out, some of them are in Romania and some are going to be in other places, probably in Europe and maybe the United States.
It's probably it's such a small story from their point of view that there's nothing.
And also, since Panos has taken over part of Windows, I feel like Surface and Windows have gotten more secretive.
Oh, interesting. Is that his style?
He likes to be secretive. He likes to try to have some big reveal at events, even at virtual events, I think.
I had a very mob-like meeting with him back in Surface 2 time frame where he was in Boston. And
were you at an Italian restaurant?
No, we were in the back of the Microsoft store that doesn't exist anymore. And he's like, he pulled me back into a room they used for like training or something. And he was like, I need you to tell me who gave you those documents. Because I had the whole thing, the second-gen Surface thing. I had all the presentations and everything. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. And he's like, yeah, no, I really need you to tell me where you got those from. And I'm like,
wow.
And I can hear you kind of imagine you can hear the door lock clicking behind you, you know.
Yeah, Paul, I don't think you understand the position.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what horsehead bed.
Did he really think you were going to tell him?
I don't know what he thought, but he said to me, well, I can tell you this. He goes, that will never happen again.
Ooh.
Wow.
Boom.
Yep.
And if he really,
I never did get a leak like that.
Little tip, Panos. If really the best thing to do is send a security detail to Paul's house.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It wasn't the weirdest meeting I've ever had with
Microsoft. That's what Apple would do.
Well, I once had a meeting in the back of an SUV in Dedham Square because they didn't like the coffee shop because they were afraid people were going to listen to us.
That's right. That's right.
And I'm like, what are you guys, the mafia? Nobody cares about your product. And by the way, their product, let me see if I can get this right. I think it was called Unix Services for Windows. It was like a...
Hey, did you see who was meeting with Paul in a coffee shop? Unix Services for Windows.
And this is like their server. Like, this is from a million years ago. This is, you know, 15 years plus. I don't know.
Was this like Mainwin or one of those companies they bought?
That's pretty funny.
Oh, probably, yeah. Probably. Yeah, whatever that stuff.
Corporate America... Yeah. This is a distinguishing feature of corporate America. Everything is all important, right? We have the most important what we're doing today. But I have to say, I'm glad to see that they're moving forward in Surface Duo. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah.
I just want to see it.
It's not the next flagship. It's not going to take over the world.
It's just cool. No.
But it's interesting, I want to see what people think of the dual screen thing and if it makes a difference. And I want to know myself. You know, I'm curious about it. I don't think it's going to change the world, but we'll see.
And this is the, I always have to ask, this is the Android one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're basically, these guys are phone guys probably, huh?
Well, Leo, it's not a phone, remember?
That's right. It's not.
I'm just going to always call it a phone.
These guys are not phone guys. They're just Android engineering and design experts. Let's be clear about that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but not phone guys.
Not phone guys. I mean, you can make a call, you know. They're not going to stop you.
Is that picture that I see of it, is that a headphone jack? Or a power jack?
No, I think that's power. And that was just for display. So that was when you couldn't even hold it, right? So we were probably standing demo. 6 feet away from it.
Okay.
And I'm sure that was there. Like you would see in a retail store just to keep it powered on.
Lock, yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Do you think it won't be this year, though, now, right?
Duo?
It is.
I think it is.
It's going to be sooner rather than later.
Really? Yep. Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
I wonder if they'll do it. So if it really is in the next month or two, will they tie it with Inspire, Microsoft's partner show, which is later this month?
You think it might be that soon, like next month or so?
That's what Windows Central thinks. Rumor, I haven't heard a date at all on it.
So you know that in a month, the Galaxy Note 20 and the Galaxy Fold will be updated. Samsung's announced their Samsung event on August 5th.
Maybe August.
Wow.
Well, before that, though, Microsoft has that event. That event that Mary Jo mentioned is in July, usually. I assume it is this year.
Late July. It is,
So it's virtual. I mean,
they could scoop Samsung. Because, honestly, that's the competition, is the giant, is the phablet and the folding phones, right? Mm.
So, Leo, I'm going to have to correct you again. There is no competition for this device. It's completely unique.
It's magical, Paul.
It's not.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about exactly.
Is there some reason they want to separate it from a phone?
Because it's not going to be a good phone.
It's going to be a bad. It's going to be a bad phone.
It's not going to have a good camera, right? It's supposedly going to have a mediocre camera.
No, that's not good.
I think what they're trying to do is come up with a new device form factor that will maybe
create a new category.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, most of us don't spend time on the phone, right? So
no, I don't care if phone.
I know. Doesn't matter if it's good as a phone for me.
No, in fact, the camera is more important than a phone.
It is.
Easily.
Yeah.
But it will be, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, so we don't know exactly when, but it sounds like this year and sooner rather than later. We don't know the price point. It's being tested by Microsoft employees out in the wild.
Right.
I don't know if it's being tested by any non-Microsoft employees, like customers. I don't know if it is.
Oh, follow Panos' Instagram feed. He's got a picture of it every 5 days.
I know. He does.
Are you kidding?
No, and Brad Anderson has it, and he showed it on a video. Photos,
Here's me and my family doing nothing in particular. Oh, look, little Johnny's holding a Duo.
Surface Duo. Yeah, Brad Anderson has it, too. I know. Like, people put it in pictures, so it's around.
Wow. Yep. That's hysterical. Okay, so are they manufacturing it, or do they figure they'll only sell 100?
That's a good question. I don't know.
We don't know. Mm-hmm.
Is it a business device or is it a consumer device?
Leo, you're you're trying to
false dichotomy.
It
is what it is.
It's a false equivalency. I don't know what that means, but.
Sweet generous.
Right. Is it going to run productivity apps? Yes. Gaming? Maybe. Maybe games? We don't know.
Will it have a SIM?
On the left, productivity on the right.
Will I need connectivity from a cell provider?
Do we know any of these things? We don't really know, right? There's not a lot we know.
Okay.
We know very basic things about this right now.
Okay.
Well, it will work like an Android phone, except it's not a phone.
Yeah.
You know, you just wanted to use Wi-Fi.
You'd have to have a SIM or you wouldn't have internet connectivity. So it's going to have a cellular connection.
Yeah.
Well, part will probably be optional. So I'm sure it will have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but, right? Yeah. Okay. Folding device without. All right.
Oh, you're going to want to be connected. Oh, the things you'll do.
Are they going to have carrier deals? We don't know. We don't know the price. We don't know. Like, there's a lot we don't know about it.
It's really interesting that they. I guess they're really. I think what they're really most afraid of is if it's a flop, they don't want to be embarrassed by it. So it's kind of like a redheaded stepchild. Like, we'll keep it at arm's length. If it's a hit, we could say it's ours. If it's a flop, we could say we never, it wasn't that important.
It's their first Android device. I mean.
Right.
They had problems with phones in the past, as we all know.
They make a Linux kernel. They make an Android device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so who are they anymore? Does anybody know?
Yeah.
So weird. All right. I'm sorry. To me, I get more excited about new form factors, things like that. That's exciting.
It's definitely interesting.
Some people get more excited by the fact that Microsoft Biz Dev Executive Peggy Johnson is going to CEO at Magic Leap.
I'm just kind of more than excited. I'm kind of like, what?
We call giving the bone a dog.
Honestly, that's like not a step up.
Well, it's a step up in job title, which I think is what this person was after.
Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Okay.
She said she always wanted to be a CEO of a company. So she came to Microsoft from Qualcomm. She had been at Qualcomm for 20-something years.
Yeah. And then
when she came to Microsoft, she was at Microsoft 4 years and had a very big job. No, she had a big job, right? She was on the senior leadership team. She was in charge of partnerships, basically, and was one of the very first executives that Satya Nadella made his pick and brought in, and she spearheaded a lot of acquisitions and deals, including LinkedIn. I saw somebody. She was a really big deal at Microsoft, and then I'm like, wait, she went to Magic Leap? Aren't they doing terribly?
They were ready to lay off half their staff, and then they got a little infusion of cash, and they said, well, maybe not. And they're pivoting to enterprise, so that might make sense to have somebody from Microsoft. Or maybe she's there to broker a sale to somebody.
Well, that's some people's theory.
So this is this is where the conspiracy theory comes in. So I think it's fair to say that no one's going to be able to save this company, right? So from her perspective, it's a win-win, because if she somehow magically pulls off this win, then she did it and she's a hero. If she doesn't, the story will be, well, no one could have saved Magic Leap, so it wasn't my fault. Right. But the thing we're hearing is people like, oh, yeah, now we see what's happening here. Stephen Eloff all over again. And it's like, guys,
because
Trojan horse
went to Nokia right before Microsoft acquired Nokia.
Yeah. Right. But that's not what happened. Right. So
I hope not.
Stephen Eloff did go to Nokia for the same reason that Peggy Johnson went to Magic Leap. It was because he was never going to be the CEO.
Wasn't gonna be the CEO. He wasn't.
He wanted that job badly. Yeah. He got it at a different company.
Yep.
I feel like I'm in the minority on this one. I thought Stephen Eloff did an incredible job at Nokia. There was nothing he could have done to save it, but he did what he thought was necessary and whatever. It didn't work out. But Peggy Johnson is in a very similar situation, frankly.
Yeah.
If anything, they're doing worse than Nokia was. But
It would make sense for Microsoft to acquire Magic Leap, because they have HoloLens, and Magic Leap has, one thing Magic Leap does have is some interesting technology.
So
does Microsoft, though.
Well, true.
Right. So actually, I could picture a Google or an Amazon or some other company buying this company instead for one reason, to keep it out of Microsoft's hands, and for the other to have, their own foothold in this market, because everyone seems to think this is going to be a big deal.
Well, Google just bought North, which was the creator of the Focals smart glasses. Yeah. So Google is in the, it could well be Microsoft would like to keep it out of the hands of Google.
Yeah, so I don't, no one will really know for sure until everything's said and done. But Peggy Johnson either literally is going there to try to save the company and keep it independent, or to do the right thing for its, I don't know if they have shareholders, but its stakeholders, its investors.
Mm. Oh, yeah,
they raised billions. And get the best possible price, whoever that is. Yeah, this company has been in a constant recurring set of getting money, raising capital or whatever it is.
Raising capital, yeah.
It's all they do. Yeah. It's all they do.
Mm-hmm. They raised over $2.6 billion from Google, AT&T, Alibaba, and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Those investors, to save it, just put $350 million in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't see this company. So we'll see.
I mean, the whole thing people were excited about with Magic Leap was this technology that they had. The problem is it required you to be strapped to a giant computer, and they never were able to transition it to the Vision, which was a lightweight form of glasses. And honestly, I think the feeling was that they weren't on the wrong track, maybe. They just needed more time.
Yeah.
No, even Microsoft with HoloLens, I mean, the central thing that they pushed for to differentiate was that it was a standalone device that wasn't tethered to anything. And if they had gone with a tethered solution, I have no doubt it would have been way more powerful on day one. But they just kind of
got to be able to walk
stake
around
that claim.
Yeah.
And I guess it paid off, because by the time they got to version 2, it became really compelling. And, version 1 obviously had its limitations. But, a completely untethered, standalone AR, it's still a big helmet, but it's more comfortable. You can see how, it's going to go down and down as they go. But they're clearly a lot further along on this vision than Magic Leap is, I guess.
Are they, though? That's the thing, is Magic Leap had this patented secret sauce.
Yeah.
So I like the conspiracy theory, honestly.
Hey, yeah. Well, a lot of people were asking. A lot of people were asking why Microsoft didn't sue Peggy Johnson, because they're like, wait, didn't she know everything what they're going to do with the HoloLens?
She's a plant. That's why they sent her there.
So GeekWire had somebody from Microsoft quoted saying, we came to an arrangement or an agreement with her and it's all good. I'm like, okay.
Okay, well, they're definitely acquiring them.
That arrangement was, we don't actually see them as competition.
Yeah.
It might be. It might be that.
You know, HoloLens is in a class by itself.
I saw this story, you know, when it broke, and I didn't leap to the conspiracy theory. I just thought, that's odd.
Yeah.
But it could have just been personal. She could have just said, you know, this is a chance to be a CEO, as you said.
That's what she said.
That's why Marissa Meyer went to Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Which was struggling at the time because it was. But the thing is, it's not like a Yahoo situation where you could magically turn this around. Magic Leap is years from producing anything.
Yep.
And the.
Yeah, and by the way, Yahoo didn't turn itself around either.
No. But she could have been a hero turning it around. That was what Meyer's hope was. So you could say, oh, maybe that's what Johnson's hope is, oh, I'm going to be the, you know, the magic. But. Mm-hmm. Magic Leap, there's no way you can look at that and say, oh, yeah, I got a plan. They just need lots more money for a lot longer period of time. They're just it's almost a university kind of R&D project. And I've talked to a lot of people who've seen it, mm-hmm. understand it, who've seen it in action, who really think it's really a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. But they just, it's the time, they are not yet ready to make something out of it. So maybe this whole enterprise pivot is BS. Maybe they were able to get more money from the original investors with the promise, look, we think we're going to be able to make a deal. Mm-hmm. It's valued at $6 billion.
I do sort of feel like this market has gone in the enterprise direction, right? In the beginning, when you hear about things like AR
Google
and VR.
That's what HoloLens
Microsoft, Microsoft with HoloLens, right? But remember that when we first saw HoloLens, it was like, you don't know what people are going to do with this. Some of the demos they showed up were very obviously games, you know, robot flying things coming out of the wall and the Minecraft thing, which is pretty awesome. But, you know, I don't know how it happened exactly, but kind of naturally, organically, these vertical markets appeared where this stuff is actually very useful. And useful in the short term, right? It's not it's a long term play. But I mean, you can sell something to companies today that makes sense. I love the car example where they're designing cars, and the guy who's doing it can have like the full AR kit, but the people who were viewing it just need the virtual reality thing. They could even use a tablet app or whatever, and they can kind of walk around it virtually. They don't have to build a clay model. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of neat things that.
There's a lot of enterprise uses for this, absolutely. But the big money is, you know, you want to make the next iPhone. And that's the big money.
Yeah.
And and Apple's working apparently very hard and close to something in the next year or so. So
and Apple, the way they do business is by the time they get set to release it, they're not going to have some giant like Space 1999 helmet. They're going to have
Right.
And that, you know, again, we can kind of debate the different approaches, but, you know, for consumer technology, it's, you know, you're not going to sit on like the bus in the morning commute with your HoloLens and drink your coffee under the lid there.
There's a good business making these things for enterprise, I'm sure. But if you could be the next iPhone, that's, you know.
Or to get this technology to work on a phone, which Microsoft is trying to do with Azure Spatial Anchors and a lot of those apps.
Interesting. I think this may be, this story may be something else. That's good. I'm glad you brought it up. They also bought Orion's Systems.
I know, weird name, right?
Yeah.
Orion's Systems. So here's another example of something Microsoft bought this week that they did a little blog post about and then never made an announcement or anything. So there's this company called Orion Systems. They're based in Snoqualmie, Washington, which is fairly close to Seattle. And what they do is they make, well, of course, it's got AI in it. That's why Microsoft wants to buy them. AI technology that works with Microsoft's Connected Store app from Dynamics. So what you do is you use IoT and sensors to like be able to plan out spaces for stores and see traffic, foot traffic in stores, and understand visually how stores are working. And then their technology takes that data and helps you analyze it and make sense of it, so that you can learn from it and optimize it in the future. How much do they pay? We don't know. How big is this company? We don't know. We don't know a lot of things, but they bought them this week. And yet another Microsoft acquisition.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. Every year, Microsoft does its reorgs. I didn't realize it's that time of year again.
It is.
Yep. New fiscal year.
July 1, start of fiscal 2021 for Microsoft. And the first thing they're doing is reorging their sales force, their field sales force. But mostly it sounds like with titles, and some teams are moving into different parts of the org. So this is not one of these orgs where Microsoft fires like 3,000 salespeople and tries to figure out a new sales model. It's not that. Right. They've done that before. That's not this. It's
but
more.
That's a mentioned effect. Sorry. You don't want to lay off people now, right? I mean, no, Microsoft might have normally done layoffs now. They'd usually do.
Yeah.
This is not the right year for that.
Yeah. I think there'll be some layoffs still at Microsoft in the coming months, as they like to say, in the coming months. Probably, I've been hearing NPM, which is one of the companies they bought and merged with GitHub. There may be some layoffs there. Maybe some LinkedIn layoffs. I don't know details on any of these things. But the Salesforce thing doesn't sound like it's a big place where there's going to be a lot of layoffs. It's more reassigning people with new titles. So people who are known as technical account managers become customer support managers, I believe, which makes more sense. So the premier field engineers are now customer engineers. This makes a lot of sense. Like, you want to know what do these people do? They're working with customers, right? So yeah. So far, that's all I know about this reorg. It's funny, I got tipped to it, and then people from Microsoft were saying, hey, we didn't even get the memo on it, so thanks for telling us that we're being reorged.
Oh, you don't want to be the one that tells them.
You are welcome.
Oh, God. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
I know. Yeah.
But they do this every year at this time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, they reorg their sales at least once a year, and then they reorg other divisions like Windows and Azure and all, also at least once a year, sometimes more.
Yeah. Really interesting. Keep them on the toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, interesting. So I saw this, Paul, and I thought of you because I didn't realize that AAA titles for video games have been $60 since 2005.
Yeah. That's right.
Long
so
time.
For the entire lifetime of the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, a top-tier AAA game titles, $59.99. That's been the price. It's not changed. I mean, that's literally 15 years. It's incredible. And now that's going to change. Apparently, I don't know if this will be standard, but I think it's going to be. I think, you know, once you see a couple of titles fall,
it's going to be – they'll all be 70.
It's going to be 70 bucks.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I kind of fall on both sides of this one. I mean, obviously, 70 bucks for a game is a lot of money.
Then again,
I've spent 120 bucks a year on Call of Duty, so who am I to talk? But as I think it was the makers of, I don't know, it was NBA 2K1 or one of the other games that's going up to $70. It's like, look, video game prices have been stable for 15 years, which is unheard of. The cost of making a modern video game has gone up exponentially. I mean, these things cost as much as Hollywood blockbusters to make now, some of them. And so, you know, there's different ways you can get around that. You can make games that are shorter, I guess. That's one thing. And then the reason I've been paying so much for Call of Duty in certain years is you have kind of this season pass mentality where you have additional content that comes out throughout the year and you kind of pay for it as it comes or whatever. I mean, that might be another way to do it. Subscription services are going to change things. Obviously, Xbox, Game Pass, and PlayStation Now, I think, is the PlayStation service, and xCloud in the future. It's one of those things that's like, 70 bucks, like, that's, it's tough. I will say that this makes subscription services look better, because one of the nice things about something like Xbox Game Pass is you can sample a game. And there's nothing like spending $60 or now $70 on a game only to get it home and find out, I don't really like this that much. And, oh, you opened it, so you can't bring it back. Or it's digital and you can't return
it. It's a bummer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe this will help drive subscription sales as well.
You know, I guess I'm all right with it. I'm, you know, we're going to do the, we're going to cover the Xbox stream that's coming up, right?
Yeah, end of the month. Yeah, the month. Gameplay reveal.
We did it for PS5, and we'll do it for Xbox Series X. It's good. I'm going to do that one because I'm kind of interested. I'm looking forward to it.
I will say, if you don't want to spend $70 on a video game, which is understandable, there is an incredible and growing selection of indie games available.
Yeah. Very good
consoles,
stuff.
Xbox, and PlayStation. Just some amazing games.
Well, there's also, I always figure that really is all about Game Pass too, right?
Because
I think the future, probably Google feels this way. I'm sure Microsoft does. I don't know about Sony. Is streaming. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But in the short term, the other nice thing about Game Pass is if, let's say, sometimes games come and go from Game Pass. So there's a game in Game Pass, you love it, you're like, oh, I'm going to want to play this for a long time, and it's leaving.
Right.
You can buy the game, and you actually get a discount because you had it on Game Pass.
Oh.
How much? Yeah. So discount? That's kind of a neat thing, just to know about. You know, I don't know if it's 10 or 15% or some small amount, but if you do want to buy this thing and keep it. As long as you do it before it leaves the service, you can save money if you're a Game Pass subscriber.
Right. Yeah. I like to have, I don't play enough games that Game Pass makes sense for me. I did it for a while and I realized, yes, I'm not using it that much. I'm going to, find a game I like, play it until I'm sick of it. And that's why $70 sounds bad. But if you get 100 hours,
if you spend a year playing that thing or more.
Yeah,
I'm playing Call of Duty games now that came out years ago, right? So there are people who bought this thing new for $60 in 2013 or something, and have been playing it ever since. I mean, that's incredible value.
There's a lot. You get a lot for your money. So I'm hoping beyond hope for the Series X because that PS5 is looking mighty good too.
Well, I think the only fair thing to do is get both.
I wish I could. I don't feel like I can, to be honest. I don't think that's justified.
Right.
I hate to say it, Paul, but I'm thinking PS5 next time.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's not a crazy choice.
I don't know. But I'll watch with interest. We're gonna cover that one. That'll be interesting. Let's take a break, and then the back of the book coming up. Our show today brought to you by Melissa. This is a company that does something every company should know about and should use, frankly. And I'm thinking about you, our former fulfillment company. We used to, the Twit merch used to, I don't want to say names because it's probably COVID related, but for whatever reason there. Something went wrong with their mailing list. A lot of our listeners, and I apologize to you, ordered through our old Twit store, ordered masks. They were really good-looking masks. I liked them. And the masks got shipped, a lot of them got shipped to Florida. Not because the people lived in Florida. They had the right address and the wrong city. And I've been getting email from people. By the way, if you ordered a mask and you didn't get it or it went to Florida, email Jerry at twit.tv. We're making you all whole, I promise. And we've got a new store. But this, I have to think, you guys, you should have had Melissa. Bad data happens to good companies. I'm not gonna blame them, but clearly they had bad address data. If you've ever forgotten to check the date on a carton of milk, poured in a bowl of cereal and been very, very disappointed, that's the last bowl of Cap'n Crunch, and I've ruined it. Data does the same thing. It goes sour. Up to 30% of customer data goes bad every year. It doesn't have a sell-by date on it, but honestly, up to 30%. Melissa makes sure your data is accurate and current so that you reach the right customers. You don't mail all the masks to Florida. Their tools help business maintain fresh data. They've been doing it for 35 years. They started back in the early days of the zip code, believe it or not. They were helping
people get the Zip Plus 4 right, and they slowly added to their data sources, and now they pretty much have it all. So that they really can make sure that your customer data is right. They do deduplication. That's another pet peeve of mine. I don't like getting those big catalogs anyway nowadays that I order online for the most part. And I think about all the trees. But what's really bad, and another company used to do this, that I would get four or five of the same exact catalog, this thick, like a phone book, sent to the same address, same name. Like, guys, you're wasting your money. One I can take, but five, you're wasting your money. Those are expensive. Those are very expensive, glossy, four-color, beautiful catalogs. They needed Melissa. Dedupe that data. Make sure your customer data is good. You can also use Melissa to add customer demographic information to your records, like property and mortgage data, marital status, social media handles. Melissa fills in the gap by adding that information you don't have. I know a lot of big companies use Melissa in their customer service centers when they're or taking orders on the phone. They start typing the address. Melissa fills it in. They have a great API for that. So you can add it to your existing software. Or it probably is in the shopping cart you use as well. It is a really great idea. Melissa also has a prospect database. So identifying current customers can easily help you find new prospective customers. Look, if you have a mailing list, if you're in business, if you're shipping, if you're taking orders, you need Melissa. You can verify everything, addresses, emails, phone numbers, names in real time, fast. They have a massive database. And any, you know, customers put the wrong address in all the time. Customer service reps do, human error, duplicated records. Melissa can help you verify your data at the point of entry. Melissa's matching and dedupe tools help you uncover, merge, and purge hard-to-find duplicate records for an accurate 360-degree view of your customers. And they have flexible pricing, flexible deployment options. They can help your business, no matter what the size, to do it within your budget. They have flexible. They have on-prem. They have web service. They have secure FTP processing. They have software as a service delivery options. They have an API. You could choose the best way to meet your unique business needs. And just so you know, Melissa continually undergoes independent security audits because they know they've got the data. They've got to protect the data. So they have a huge commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance. The utmost dedication to your data's security by implementing strong controls and safeguards when processing your data. 10,000 businesses trust the address experts at Melissa. You can trust Melissa to be your foundation for data-driven success. And avoid those embarrassing duplicate catalogs or merchandise going to the wrong state. Melissa, by the way, is doing something really cool. I want to mention this because I want to give them some credit. They are supporting communities and qualifying essential workers during the COVID-19 crisis. If your organization qualifies, you can get 6 months of free service, but you can apply online. Go to Melissa's website. And if you're an essential worker, community service, if you do something important, check it out. See if you qualify. That's a good deal. 6 months of service free. Don't put up with old sour customer contact data. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox anytime, right now. And, by the way, get started today with 1,000 records cleaned free. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit. Really great people, data scientists who know how to do this and do it right. Melissa.com/twit. Melissa.com/twit. Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate your support, your help, too, in keeping our data clean. Now it's time for Mr. Thurrott. And our tip of the week. Oh. What? Didn't do it? Yes, no. You did.
So this was probably inspired by last week's Apple announcements. I know a lot of people in the Windows, Microsoft community were kind of bummed out by Apple being able to be all consistent and beautiful looking and everything. And so Brad had written an article yesterday or the day before the other day about some of the things that you can do to customize your Windows 10 desktop, not specifically to make it more like the Mac, although some of them do that. And I was interested to see that some of the things he was using are Apex that I've had in the past that are kind of worth mentioning again. And the two big ones, he recommends a bunch of different things that I wouldn't necessarily use all of these, but the two big ones for me are Taskbar X, which is that utility that centers the icons in the taskbar. Instead of having them jammed over the left of the screen, you can have them in the middle, which is how I prefer it. I was talking about getting rid of some of the stuff that Microsoft puts on there by default on a laptop. But when you're on a desktop, you have a slightly different problem because you have a much bigger screen. Having them kind of right front and center is kind of nice. And then the other one he talks about is the Power Toy set, which is this the new Power Toys, right? This thing that Microsoft is developing now. There's a bunch of utilities in there, but one of them is called Power Toys Run. And this works like Spotlight Search in on the Mac. And so you hit, I think it's Alt Space. Another great keyboard combo, Mary Jo, to bring up this search box in the middle of the screen. On a Mac, I think it's probably like Command Space or whatever that key is to the left of the space bar. But he also talks about things like Rain Meter, which is kind of a classic, Curtains, which he uses to replace the Start button icon, which I don't think is completely necessary. In fact, I think Taskbar X might actually offer that functionality too. And then the UWP version of File Explorer, which I don't think it's quite ready yet, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll get there one day. Anyway, some interesting stuff in there, so something to look at.
And you can get it all in one bundle, right?
No, these all come from different places.
Oh, it's not all the startup stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's not all startup. Okay. That'd be nice.
I'm surprised.
I feel like I've had something that, yep.
I was just going to say, I can't believe people pay to center icons on the taskbar.
So actually, that one's free. That one's free.
Okay, good. That's good.
Make it look like a Mac, Mary Jo. You'll love it.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole goal, right? I'm like, do people really even care? Why?
Yeah.
I know.
That's a good tip.
I like it.
That's on. Yeah. That's Brad's tips at Therop.com. Yep. You got an app of the week?
Yes, I do. So Microsoft announced yesterday, that Halo 3 is finally coming to the PC. For me, this is kind of the big one. I mean, obviously, the first Halo is iconic. Halo 2 is the one that brought multiplayer and was the inspiration for the multiplayer system that's in Xbox Live and has been ever since, you know, whatever. But I still, Halo 3 was, to me, was the high point of this series by far. And it is the no, it's not. I was going to say it's the one. It is actually the first three Halo games. I have played those single player experiences through multiple times, and Halo 3 was a particular. It was one of those ones where I kind of did it on normal, then went back and did it on hard, whatever it was called. And anyway, if you have the Master Chief Collection on the PC, you'll be getting that next. I think it's next Thursday. And if you don't, you can buy it inexpensively. Separately, it will be on Steam. It's on, you know, obviously the Microsoft Store or whatever, but a remastered, you know, 4K. I can't wait. I'm literally going to play this game straight through again. Like, I probably have not done this in 10 plus years. It was the first big Halo game on the 360, if I'm not mistaken. I think it might have been. I don't remember the history of it anyway, but this is an awesome one. This is one of the best ones of all time.
Nice.
This
Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, today is the day, if you are a Dynamics 365 or Power Platform user, that you want to go and check the plans that Microsoft is releasing for Wave 2 2020. So this Microsoft Dynamics is one of the only teams that does this twice a year, like clockwork. They put out these plans and they say, here's the hundreds of features we are going to add to all the different parts of Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform in the fall. And they're going to start rolling out in October. They're going to roll out through March 2021. So it's like a roadmap, but it's even better because it doesn't just give you a vague description of the service. It's like, here's exactly what we're going to do. And as time goes by, they modify these plans. If they decide to slip a feature or add another feature, they update the plans. And they do this very regularly, right? So today they announced the plans for the wave two for Dynamics. There's all kinds of things. You should go read them and not have me summarize it because it's so involved. There's CRM stuff, there's ERP stuff, there's HR and finance. And then there's some things they're doing for the HoloLens users around the Dynamics 365 branded apps for the HoloLens. There's some Power Platform stuff in terms of new capabilities around Power Virtual Agents and Power Automate, which used to be called Flow. So just go and look up the plans and read them if you care about the set of products.
Cool.
Yep.
There couldn't be a bigger contrast
between Halo.
Paul Thurrott's Halo 3
yes.
and your Power Platform features coming this fall.
Yeah, pretty much not.
And that's why
they're both awesome in their own way. I mean,
they are.
That's why we love you both. Do you have a code name this week?
I do. And so I'm very curious what you guys think of this, if you've heard about it. It's the code name is Project Freta, F-R-E-T-A. And this is a Microsoft research project that anybody can go and use. So what it is a way to help spot rootkits in cloud virtual machines, but it's for Linux, which I didn't realize at first. So it's right now it's free. It's a cloud-based service. It automates full system volatile memory inspection of Linux systems using VM snapshots. That's the short definition of what this is. And so what it does is it captures a memory snapshot of Hyper-V Linux guest host. And what all the components of Freta are an analysis engine that consumes the snapshots. And then there's a sensor that's built for Azure that lets users move their live VMs virtual memory to offline so that they can basically disrupt a potential rootkit using this technology. So Microsoft already has paid technology that does this as part of Defender ATP and some of its other security products. But this is free right now. And I'm curious where they take this and if they add Windows to it too. Right now it's just a Linux thing. But very interesting that they went public with this and they're encouraging people to go and kick the tires of it.
Nice. Project Freta.
Yes. I don't know why it's called Freta. I was trying to find references. Couldn't find anything what Freta is or what it refers to. But yeah.
Wasn't it one of the people in ABBA?
Probably. Yeah.
And soon Agnetha, Benny, and Bjorn will have projects for all of them.
Yeah. I know there's something going on. Very wasn't that Freta?
Yeah. Has its own theme song.
Do you have some beer for us?
I do. And I always vowed I would never make a shandy type beer, the beer pick of the week. But you know what? On a hot summer day, what's wrong with something
it's
like that?
It's summertime, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So there are beers that are called Radlers, German style Radlers or shandies. And what they are is usually like a partial citrusy or other lemonade-y kind of juice mixed with beer. And if you're a beer purist, you're like, oh, that sounds terrible. But on a hot day, something like a Jack's Abbey Blood Orange Wheat, which is only 4%.
That sounds great.
It's kind of a refreshing alternative, right? If you like blood orange and you like a wheat beer and you want something that's not heavy and would be nice to drink outside with your mask temporarily lowered or raised,
yep.
This could be your beer.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah, Jack's Abbey, they're from Framingham, Massachusetts. They make a lot of really great beers of all types. And this is yet another one of their very nice options.
Very nice. I like it. Refreshing.
Very refreshing.
Right down the street from where Mary Jo grew up.
Oh.
It is indeed.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep.
It's a nice place, too, if you've never been.
Very nice. My mom said the outdoor tap room is open with social distancing, and they have excellent food and great beers, and you go sit outside at picnic tables with your own group.
I mean, I haven't been there in a few years, but it's the food there is surprisingly good. Yep.
So according to Friendly Manitoba in our chat room, Project Freta is named for the birthplace of Marie Curie in Warsaw, Poland.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Don't know what that has to do with rootkits, but...
I don't know what that has to do with ABBA, but thanks, buddy.
I would love to play some ABBA right now, but when I played the White Lion song, Yeah, they took the whole Windows Weekly show off the air.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because I feel like I'm the only one that's been promoting that band in the past 5 years.
Honestly, just, we sold, you know, I'm sure, 1,000 copies of that song. But no, we don't want any publicity.
Aw. Really?
So we had to take it down and edit out the White Lion song. So I'm not putting any ABBA in. Although,
no, we don't need ABBA.
We could help their career too. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they need it.
I can't believe that I knew the other three names of ABBA.
I was impressed by that. I'm like, how did you know that right off the top of your head?
That is some, there's some weird stuff in there, but that I didn't expect.
You got to go
better
to
than you know, keyboard shortcuts. It's like names of the band and members of ABBA or a keyboard shortcuts.
Agnetha, wow. Benny, Bjorn, and Annafrid is the fourth one, wow. Not Freda. But I went with
Annafrid, and that's she was Frida.
Frida. So maybe that's Frida. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's the ABBA.
Yep.
Of ABBA.
All right. Yep.
So excited.
You're the top of the list.
Knowing you, knowing you. Ah. New music is coming soon from ABBA, apparently, according to the chat room, which has really got their finger on the pulse.
They're right, yikes, right on it.
Yes.
We talked about Finland. Okay. Now we're talking about Sweden. We're you know, yep, doing the whole tour over there.
Screw you, Norway.
All right, kids. Time to say ta-ta, farewell, auf Wiedersehen. Goodbye. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. Add 7 to that would be 1800 UTC. If you want to watch us do it live, and remember, that's different from consuming the show in a normal way, you can watch the making of behind the scenes at our stream at twit.tv/live. You can also join the chat room while you're watching at irc.twit.tv. That's the whole live interactivity stuff. And that goes 24/7. Even when we're not doing new stuff, we show old stuff there too. So there's always something going on. And I say that because I know sometimes middle of the night, get a little lonely. You want some geek company. We're here for you. On-demand versions of the show, of course, that's the most convenient. Always available at our website, as with all our shows. In this case, twit.tv/ww. A number of people have noted that we no longer do the low-quality video or the medium-quality video. We just put out an HD version of the video and the audio. And I know for some people that's a hardship, that bandwidth. It's a gigabyte, you know, often for a entire Windows Weekly. But there are a couple of options. Of course, you can always get audio, which will be the smallest version. But you can also go to YouTube, and YouTube transcodes everything we upload into a variety of sizes. You can turn it all the way down to 240, and down, and use a YouTube downloader to get the file. And as they say, Bob's your uncle, which I have found out, by the way, is not a good thing to say.
We'll go uncle is named Bob.
Yeah, into the genesis of Bob's your uncle another time. it has to do with an English commander, the British Army in colonial India, who was a son of a gun. But his troops liked him, so they you know, Bob's your uncle. Now that I know that, I won't be using that phrase ever again. Bob's your uncle. What else? Oh, subscribe. That's what I want you to do. Please get a podcast app and subscribe. There's lots of them for every platform. By subscribing, you do two wonderful things. You guarantee you always have the latest copy of Windows Weekly available for you to listen. And you help us by just kind of getting every episode of Windows Weekly. We like that. We don't want you to miss one. That's all. So thank you. Thank you, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul's at Thurrott.com. That's his website, Thurrott. His books are at leanpub.com. That's including The Field Guide to Windows 10, newly updated to help you with your 2004 woes. Mary Jo Foley, he shares your pain. Let's put it that way. Mary Jo Foley is available at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. And they will both be back here next week. I hope you will too. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the TWiT Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and are breaking the tech news. That's right, it's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.